And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here in the studio of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, www.freakradio.org, on Thursday, December 17th. I'd like to remind you to have a pencil and paper handy to take notes. You might want to recall that web page, that email address, that telephone number, that address, so you can take action later and be effective. Let's start with the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. Buffalo Field Campaign patrols continue to be out in the field all day, every day, monitoring buffalo migration corridors along the north and west boundaries of Yellowstone National Park. We are very pleased to report that buffalo have been keeping themselves alive since our last update. Recent hunting pressure along Yellowstone's northern boundary in the Gardner Basin has driven many buffalo to seek shelter deeper in the park outside of Montana's killing fields. Recent snowfall has us worried that this might trigger a large migration into the hunt zones, but both the buffalo and their Buffalo Field Campaign defenders were able to take a breath and enjoy this brief respite. We need you to volunteer. The Buffalo Field Campaign has seasonal openings for field volunteers. We have opportunities for every season, but we are in great need of folks right now during our field season, which runs through May. This is the time of year when wild bison might migrate into Montana and face death and harassment. Any buffalo within Montana's borders are in danger of being shot on sight, hazed, captured, or shipped to a slaughterhouse, or all of the above. All volunteers are provided with room, board, gear, and training in exchange for staffing our field patrols. We cater to almost any dietary need. We are located in a warm log cabin by beautiful Hebgen Lake, just a few miles outside of West Yellowstone, Montana. And we also run a camp north of Yellowstone in the Gardner Basin. Go to our website to learn more and make your plans. We'll see you on the front lines. The Buffalo Field Campaign is at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. Send them lots of donations. Once again, that address, Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions about what they need, give them a call at 406-646-0070. And do give a call if you're going to go up and volunteer. Once again, that phone number, 406-646-0070. You can find out all this information and more at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has sighted lobster poachers in Southern California. Wildlife officers in Orange County conducted a successful four-day lobster poaching detail over a two-weekend period. Following the season opener in October, public complaints began pouring into the California Department of Fish and Wildlife poaching hotline about undersized lobster being taken from the San Clemente Pier and Dana Point jetties. The information came from law-abiding lobster anglers who were witnessing the crimes and reporting them through the CalTIP, California's Turn-In Poachers and Polluters program. Meticulous planning and coordinated patrol efforts resulted in 17 citations, with a total of 25 violations found. Charges included possession of undersized lobsters, lobster report card violations, possession of undersized kelp and barred sand bass, and failure to have a lobster measuring device in possession. If convicted, the individuals could face up to a $1,000 fine and 6 months in jail for each offense. Wildlife officers successfully returned a total of 33 illegally harvested undersized lobsters, 2 kelp bass, and 3 barred sand bass to the ocean. Protecting California's natural resources requires dedication, passion, and teamwork, said CDFW Lieutenant Dave McNair. Those anglers who came forward and provided information became an integral part of our team. This is a perfect example of how the CalTIP program works. CalTIP is a confidential secret witness plan that encourages the public to provide wildlife officers with factual information leading to the arrest of poachers and polluters. The CalTIP number, 888-334-2258. Once again, 888-334-2258. Is printed on the back of every hunting and fishing license. CalTIPS can also be related by texting to TIP411, which allows the public to text message an anonymous tip to wildlife officers unless the officers respond back, creating an anonymous two-way conversation. Anyone with a cell phone may send an anonymous tip to CDFW by texting CalTIP, followed by a space and the message 847411. That's TIP411. Once again, 847411. There is also an app for smartphones that works similarly. For more information about the program and how to download the new CalTIP app, please visit the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's CalTIP webpage. That webpage is www.wildlife.ca.gov/enforcement/CalTIP. And a lawsuit challenges failure to protect coastal marten from the Environmental Protection Information Center. Two conservation groups have sued the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for failing to protect the coastal marten under the Endangered Species Act. The Center for Biological Diversity and the Environmental Protection Information Center first petitioned for protection for the coastal marten, sometimes known as the Humboldt marten, in 2010. Represented by Earth Justice, the groups are now challenging the service's April 2015 decision not to award federal protection to the marten. The bushy-tailed carnivores were once common, but now fewer than 100 of them survive in California, while an unknown but very small number are still found in Oregon. A slender mustelid related to minks and otters, the coastal marten survives only in three isolated populations in old-growth forest and dense coastal shrub in northern California and southern and central coastal Oregon. The science clearly shows that the coastal marten deserves protection under the Endangered Species Act, but the agency ignored its own scientists in making the political decision to betray the marten, said Tiara Curry, a senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity and lead author of the petition to protect the marten. The marten faces a barrage of threats, including logging, fire, climate damage, trapping in Oregon, vehicle strikes, rodentside poisoning, and small population size. In denying the marten protection, the service ignored the best available science, including its own scientific reports. In the past year, the agency has come under increasing criticism for overruling its own scientists and too often bowing to political pressure. We're dealing with an animal that is already extinct throughout more than 83% of its historic range. It's like discovering that the ivory-billed woodpecker still exists, yet refusing to protect it, said Greg Lowry, an attorney for Earth Justice representing the groups. If we're going to survive and recover, coastal martens desperately need the protection that the Endangered Species Act protection provides. The service's decision not to protect the coastal marten is scientifically and morally unjustifiable, said Rob DiPerna, the Environmental Protection Information Center's California Forest and Wildlife Advocate. The marten is a special part of the natural heritage of the Northwest and deserves full protection. The coastal marten's historic range extended from Sonoma County in coastal California north through the coastal mountains of Oregon. In Oregon, the marten now lives only in a small area within Siskiyou and Suislas National Forest. Coastal martens were believed to be extinct in California, with 95% of their old-growth forest habitat lost and a history of excessive trapping, until they were rediscovered on the Six Rivers National Forest in 1996. In 2009, the first California marten to be photographed in recent times was detected at Prairie Creek Redwoods State Park by a remote sensing camera. The extremely secretive animals are known for their slinky walking motion and expert hunting skills, typically about 2 feet long with large triangular ears and a long tail. They eat smaller mammals, berries, and birds, and are preyed on by larger mammals and raptors. For more information, please visit www.wildcalifornia.org. And wolves have retained Endangered Species Act protections in Wyoming and Great Lakes states in this story from Earth Justice, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Wolves in Wyoming, Michigan, Minnesota, and Wisconsin will retain their federal protections after a contentious policy rider, which would have stripped them of Endangered Species Act protections, was excluded from the final omnibus government spending bill released yesterday. The rider would have overridden two federal court decisions, including an Earth Justice victory for wolves in Wyoming, that found those states' management plans do not sufficiently protect wolves, while also barring further judicial review of the court decision overrides. The following is a statement from Drew Caputo, Earth Justice Vice President of Litigation for Oceans, Lands, and Wildlife. Today, we celebrate that wolves in these areas will remain protected and not be subject to the same sort of unregulated killing that nearly wiped them out in the first place. We thank the members of the House and Senate who stood strong for the protection of wolves and recognize that a spending bill is no place to make a life and death policy decision about our nation's wildlife. We remain steadfast in our commitment to fight for the wolves and other species under threat of extinction. And the latest studies show that northern spotted owl populations are in rapid decline in this story by Rob DiPerna of the Environmental Protection Information Center. The northern spotted owl is in decline across its entire range, and its rate of decline is increasing. That is the conclusion of a major demographic study produced by federal scientists published recently in the journal Condor. The study examined survey results from monitoring areas across the range of the imperiled owl, and results suggest that immediate and aggressive improvements in existing conservation efforts will be necessary if the owl is to persist in the wild. The northern spotted owl was listed as threatened species under the Federal Endangered Species Act in 1990. The loss of old-growth forests on which the owl depends to logging across the Pacific Northwest on both federal and non-federal lands was the impetus behind the original listing and eventually served as the basis for the creation of the Northwest Forest Plan, the forest plan that now governs activities on federal lands within the owl's range. However, over 25 years of federal ESA protections, including the implementation of the Northwest Forest Plan on federal lands, has not been enough to curtail the decline of the northern spotted owl. The latest demographic study indicates that habitat loss continues to plague the owl range-wide, and that the expansion of the barred owl into the historic range of the spotted owl has further confounded efforts to protect and conserve northern spotted owls in the wild. The latest demographic study results for the northern spotted owl confirms EPIC's worst fears about the perilous condition of owls' population in California and across the species range, and shows alarming trends and grim prospects for the conservation of the owl. After reviewing results of the latest democratic study results for the northern spotted owl in 2011, EPIC understood that the more aggressive and intermediate conservation measures for the owl were necessary if the species was to survive in the wild. Taking this into account, EPIC initiated a two-pronged approach to increasing the listing status and conservation options for the northern spotted owl. In 2012, EPIC filed a petition with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service requesting that the agency uplist or reclassify the northern spotted owl from threatened to endangered under the federal ESA. In conjunction, EPIC also filed a listing petition for the northern spotted owl under the California Endangered Species Act with the California Fish and Game Commission. Our federal reclassification petition for the northern spotted owl has been mired in agency heel-dragging on the part of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Although the reclassification petition was submitted to the service in 2012, the agency did not even produce its initial 90-day evaluation and finding on the merits of the petition until April 2015, and then only under the threat of imminent litigation from the Environmental Protection Information Center. The listing petition for the northern spotted owl under CSCA has similarly been subject to incomprehensible agency delays and heel-dragging, which has been perpetuated by both the California Fish and Game Commission and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. It took the Fish and Game Commission nearly a year before it even held the initial hearing on the merits of our petition to list the spotted owl. Although the spotted owl became a candidate for listing under CESA in December of 2013 and was afforded temporary protections, the final hearings on the merits of the CESA listing petition for the northern spotted owl has yet to be scheduled, largely as a result of the failure of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to prepare and produce a status review and report for the owl within statutorily required time frames. At present, there is no date certain for the department to produce and submit the report to the Fish and Game Commission, despite the fact the report is now over 6 months delinquent. The Environmental Protection Information Center will continue to advocate for increased and more immediate and aggressive measures to conserve the northern spotted owl. If you'd like more information, visit their website at www.wildcalifornia.org. And opposing the Japanese pirate whalers in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, this essay written by Captain Paul Watson. Japan has declared war on the whales in the Southern Ocean. Their fleet is currently en route to the Southern Ocean in abject disrespectful defiance of the International Court of Justice. The signatory nations to the relevant conventions have done nothing about it but talk. No other non-governmental organization, aside from Sea Shepherd, is doing anything to intervene. Japan returns to the killing fields with an arrogant confidence that they will be unopposed. The question is what the Sea Shepherd to do about this egregious and illegal invasion of the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. Sea Shepherd has actively opposed the unlawful slaughter of whales in the Southern Ocean since 2005, with aggressive interventions that have saved the lives of 6,402 whales, including minke, humpback, and fin whales. Sea Shepherd has fought the outlaw whalers on the high seas and in the courts in the United States and in Australia. In 2008, the Australian Federal Court declared that Japanese whaling in the waters of the Australian Whale Sanctuary was unlawful and issued an injunction against the whalers. Last month, the court fined the whalers $1 million Australian for continuing to slaughter whales in breach of the injunction. In 2014, the International Court of Justice ruled that Japanese whaling was neither scientific nor lawful and ordered the Japanese whaling fleet to cease and desist from killing whales. In 2014, the International Whaling Commission once again denied a permit to Japan to kill whales in the Southern Ocean. This year, the IWC and its scientific committee declared that the revised Japanese research program, NEWREP-A, also had insufficient elements to be considered of scientific nature. Japan agreed to abide by the order of the International Court of Justice and did not kill a single whale during the 2014-2015 season. The cessation of their whaling operations was an acknowledgement that they accepted the ruling of the court. Now, in open and arrogant defiance of the Australian Federal Court, the International Court of Justice, and the International Whaling Commission, Japan has announced that they will return to kill whales in the Southern Ocean. Australia and other members of the IWC should take action to stop the whalers. The question is, will they, or have they been compromised by threats of trade retaliation from Japan? There is no question that Sea Shepherd opposition has been a leading factor in bringing Japanese whalers to their knees, both through an annual reduction in quotas and in focusing international public attention on Japan's nefarious whaling activities. Sea Shepherd has paid a heavy price for this opposition. Japan successfully sued Sea Shepherd USA in a U.S. federal court to secure a temporary injunction to prevent Sea Shepherd USA from approaching Japanese whalers and convicted Sea Shepherd USA directors of contempt after the Japanese factory ship Nishin Maru was rammed and damaged by three Sea Shepherd ships in the Southern Ocean in 2013. The Japanese whaling ship Shonan Maru No. 2 rammed and destroyed the vessel 80 Gill that was chartered by Sea Shepherd in 2010. Japan simply refused to acknowledge the investigation by New Zealand and suffered no legal consequences for destroying that vessel. Japan also used its economic and political clout to have myself placed on the Interpol Red List, demanding extradition on the charges of conspiracy to trespass on a whaling ship and interference with commerce. Japan uses the courts to get what it wants and ignores the court rulings against it. Japan, however, made a major mistake in bringing its case before the U.S. federal court because it gives Sea Shepherd USA the legal grounds to countersue Japan. Japan submitted itself to the U.S. jurisdiction when they filed against Sea Shepherd USA, and that has enabled Sea Shepherd USA to countersue against Japan. Our case has changed from being a defensive action to a legalistic attack on Japanese whaling, where we can seek rulings that prohibit Antarctic whaling, declare the whalers are engaged in piracy, award us damages for the loss of the 80 Gill, secure an injunction preventing the ICR from attacking Sea Shepherd ships, expose the ICR's illegal activities to the world, and perhaps even secure an injunction against Japan's illegal whaling activities in the Southern Ocean. We cannot simply defeat Japan on the water. We also need to do it in the courts, and we cannot surrender to their arrogance in defying international law. Because Sea Shepherd USA and myself are legally prohibited from interfering with illegal Japanese whaling operations, Sea Shepherd USA is restricted to battling the whalers in the U.S. courts, while Sea Shepherd Global maintains their legal right to continue operations on the high seas in accordance with Dutch and Australian law. For over a decade, Sea Shepherd has contributed to Japanese whaling operational losses and to the now diminished quota of 333 whales instead of the 1,035 whales they previously and unsuccessfully attempted to take. This means that because of Sea Shepherd efforts, 602 minke whales every year going forward will not be a part of Japan's kill list, nor will there be a single humpback or fin whale on their death roster. The issue, however, is not just one of numbers. We are talking about the integrity of the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary that demands nothing less than a zero quota. The logistics of the situation in the Southern Ocean have changed considerably. Lowering the quota and expanding their hunting area means it is more difficult and takes more time to track down the whaling fleet, and in that time they can take most of their reduced quota. They are expected to take aggressive measures to stop any interference by Sea Shepherd Global. They have also said that if they don't reach their quota, they will add the losses to the quota for the following season. Although neither Sea Shepherd USA nor I can legally oppose the illegal whalers on the high seas, my right to report on the activities of and to give moral support to the efforts of the Sea Shepherd Global remains. I have absolutely no control over the campaigns by Sea Shepherd Global, but is there no need for me to be directly involved? The campaigns have been in the capable hands of Captains Alex Corneliusen of Netherlands, Captain Peter Hammerstedt of Sweden, and Captain Siddharth Chakravarti of India since 2012, and they have courageously and effectively defended the whales of the Southern Ocean. My hands have been tied behind my back by the U.S. court, but I have not been gagged, and these three intrepid captains and their brave crews have continued on this urgent effort to stop Japanese crimes in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary. Although I cannot be involved, I can exercise my freedom of speech to wish them well in these efforts. Sea Shepherd Global has informed me that they have a new ship under construction, a long-range and fast vessel that is being built specifically for hunting whalers and other high seas poachers. Unfortunately, that ship will not be ready for deployment until September of this next year. In the meantime, Sea Shepherd USA needs to continue to petition the U.S. courts to sanction Japan's unacceptable defiance of international law. Sea Shepherd Global is sending the Steve Irwin to the Southern Ocean this December on a mission to intervene against the illegal activities in the Southern Ocean, all illegal activities. Sea Shepherd Global is an anti-poaching organization dedicated to operating within the boundaries of international law to uphold international conservation law with a commitment to absolute nonviolent tactics. The Japanese whalers must be stopped. Sea Shepherd Global first and foremost urges the signatory nations of the International Whaling Commission and the International Court of Justice to enforce that law. And I have been informed by Sea Shepherd Global that they are committed to upholding the law against all poaching in the Southern Ocean. To be blunt, however, intervention this year will be difficult. The whalers have a great area to operate with a reduced quota. They will have three harpoon vessels to block any approach by any Sea Shepherd Global ship. Sea Shepherd Global does not have the war chest of Greenpeace, and although Sea Shepherd Global has been requesting support from Greenpeace, they are not expected to support Sea Shepherd. Greenpeace has a ship in Chile, and they could intervene. We hope they do so, but there is no sign that they intend to do so. They do, however, have a petition. All I can say is that Sea Shepherd Global has informed me that they will do all they can with the resources that they have within the boundaries of practicality to stop all ongoing poaching in the Southern Ocean. This includes Japan's illegal slaughter of whales in the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, as well as the ongoing poaching operations of the remaining Bandit 6 toothfish poaching vessels. Japan has vowed to slaughter 4,400 whales in their new so-called scientific program. Sea Shepherd has told me that they are committed to the objective of making sure that they do not. No other organizations in the world have committed as much time and effort and taken as much risk as Sea Shepherd in this long crusade to defend the Southern Ocean from criminal activity. Sea Shepherd's commitments to defend the Southern Ocean is absolute and will continue no matter what the obstacles or the strength of the opposition. Sea Shepherd USA and Sea Shepherd Global are strong in their support base, and stronger in their support base, the stronger the effectiveness. People can support Sea Shepherd USA's ongoing battles against the Japanese poachers, or people can support Sea Shepherd Global's efforts to oppose the poachers on the high seas, or people can support both efforts. Together, yet separately, Sea Shepherd USA and Sea Shepherd Global can end the renegade illegal whale killing actions of the Japanese whaling fleet. This essay by Captain Paul Watson, founder of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, and you can find their action updates at www.seashepherd.org.au. That's www.seashepherd.org.au. And from Germany, we get news that A lockdown on coal diggers has been taken in defense of the Hombach Forest from the Hombacher Forest News, as found on the Earth First Newswire. On the night of Friday, the 11th of December, until Saturday, the 12th of December, four activists climbed onto two coal diggers in the coal bunker at the Hombach Mine, chained far above them with bicycle locks around their necks to the machine, and held banners that read, "There are no jobs on a dead planet." Once again, we discuss how this planet could be protected from the threat of climate change, from people who most likely will not live to see the impact because they are considered so important they are protected from any harm, if necessary, even with thousands of armed men in uniform. But already hundreds die every day, not due to climate change, but due to an economic system which is considered a civilized affluent upbringing. Worldwide, more people die each year from hunger than in all the wars together previously. Is this how advanced civilization should be? The activists in this action say that it is possible and necessary to intervene directly and to interfere where livelihoods are destroyed, regardless of rules that were made by the companies that operate this machinery of destruction, rules to which we have not agreed. And in Italy, there is claim of responsibility for a fur farm raid in this story received anonymously to Bite Back, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Liberation of mink in Ferrara. At this time of year, mink farms have something special. If you come close, you can perceive nervous animals and the characteristic odor of death. This is the time that the animals are killed for their skins. We have decided not to stand by and watch the situation or wait for the farmers to stop. They never will, and at least not until they are forced to. Our experience has taught us that the pressure of direct action is a way to close these camps, not in years, but now and immediately, because a place of exploitation and torture cannot be tolerated. As we do not tolerate this system that in its gears is grinding bodies, forests, and every freedom. A handful of farmers are making a fortune on the skin of thousands of animals every year. Their profit is increasing since the number of farms is growing and existing ones are expanding. How many anti-species are there? What are we waiting for? Is it the farmers who are too safe, or is it us who want to feel safe? There's no place too safe for an exploiter if there is a strong will to attack it. What are sensors and cameras against our determination and a good plan? As the mink find their way out of the cages, we should find a way to reach them. On October 31st in Giolanda di Savoia, the farmer slept soundly as we bypassed his alarms, which were required for the animals to escape. Inside, we opened the cages, avoiding the alarm sensors. Hundreds of minks soon were released and began to run away from that camp, making long jumps into the darkness of that night. Signed, The White Mink. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have this week for the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. If you're in the Moscow, Idaho area, listen to 90.3 KRFP Radio Free Moscow at 1:15 p.m. on Wednesdays, right after Democracy Now! And you can always go to radioforall.net, where you can listen online or download this or previous editions of the Earth First Update. Due to Christmas Eve, there will not be an Earth First Update produced next week, but do tune in the following week for another Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is produced by Earth First Radio News in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Well, thank you for listening, and do tune in 2 weeks for another edition of the Earth First Update.